Hi, everyone. I'm Brené Brown, and I'd love to tell you about my podcast, Dare to Lead. Innovation, creativity, building a better, more just world, all of these things require absolutely courageous leadership, especially given the complexity and chaos of the world right now. The Dare to Lead podcast is a collection of conversations with change catalysts, culture shifters, some troublemakers, folks who are really daring to create and change the world. I hope you join us.
I thought that was a tomb rumor.
No, yeah. Sir.
Okay, yeah. Now it's time to start the intro, starring me, Justin, the only sane one on the show.
The funniest goof.
I got my yellow belt.
Oh, nice, dude.
Thanks, dude.
Was there doubt in your mind that you were not going to pass the test? Because you actually had to wait for the results for your Taekwondo test.
That's true. I did have to wait for the results, and then my teacher today...
Did you have to wait in line with the six-year-olds as well, or did they just say
Russ, don't be an asshole. She was five. It was just me and her in taking our tests and in the white belt section, and we both did a great job.
Awesome.
What level is yellow?
I didn't like have how, to rate her.
How close to the top is it?
I'd rather not clarify.
It's the second one.
It's the one after white. It's the one after nothing. It's just above nothing. They give you a white belt for coming in and giving them $30.
White belt is functional. The white belt holds your gi together. That's it.
Actually, no, you tie your gi together. The white belt does nothing. But the yellow belt, I'm a weapon. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best games of the month.
My name is Chill Dan, and I know the best games of the month.
My name is Todd, and I play game.
My name is Russ Rushing, and I know the best game of the week.
Excited to meet Todd in this episode, finally.
Here on The Besties, we talk about the latest and greatest in sports, technology, cars, entertainment, fashion, men's fitness and women's fitness and so much more. But this month, it's all about video
etymology.
Games.
Oh, damn.
No, video
now,
games.
Now, Justin, I heard rumor about video games that it was, because my kids love them, right? Yeah. But I don't, I'm more of a, silver screen guy.
Sure.
And so it's really just what we're talking about when we talk about video games is like a fancy term for Pac-Man, right?
They've come a long way since Pac-Man. Yeah, and we're going to explore just that topic.
They're talking a lot about Dig Dug, and I'm assuming that's just about a man named Doug, who's pretty cool.
Who you can dig.
And I guess he also eats ghosts. Like all video games, they eat the ghosts and pills and stuff in video games, right?
Not all games have pills anymore. Actually, that's a misconception. I met with Shigeru Miyamoto to talk about video games, and he told me not all games have pills anymore.
Wow. Roll the clip.
Let's hear that now. And it's just video of Shigeru Miyamoto saying, no, not anymore. Not all games.
Hey, y'all. 2017, gaming-wise at least, what the fuck is going on? Because it's extremely good.
It's almost like 2017 is compensating for something video game-wise.
It's like the best first 2 months of games of a year that I can maybe ever remember. Holy shit.
Yeah,
it's been very, very strong.
You know what it feels like? It's like we were getting all these games from people in America, right? Mm. And they were all the same. And then everyone everywhere else in the world was like, what if we started kicking ass?
Did we do it again? Or none of our four games were made in the U.S., right? Wow.
Yeah.
Is that what happened last week, too?
I think most of them.
Where was that made?
I think America, maybe.
Are you sure? It seems European because
there
it's so
Valve
good.
Staff, former Valve staffers on it, so I think it was American.
Eric Wolpaw.
Can we do honorable mentions?
Talk about the
stuff that didn't quite make the list because I think we all had some stuff.
Can I name a big one that should be on this list? Hidden Folks.
I saw that on the App Store.
I saw that on the App Store today, and I was curious about it, but I have not played it.
It's like Waldo.
Yeah, it's like Where's Waldo, but made by the guy who did Boundin, which is one of my favorite games, like, period. And it's Where's Waldo, but black and white, and you can play it on your iPad or iPhone or Steam. And the locations, they're huge. Like, you have to zoom in and zoom out to just kind of get around the kind of 2D maps. And everything is interactive. So, like, it has all these cute noises that I think were made by Adrian, the designer. So you'll tap the bushes, and they'll move around a little bit and go...
Wow.
Or there'll be a garage, and you can lift the garage door.
Dude.
Yeah, dog.
And they really have come a long way since Pac-Man.
Yeah,
I know. Who is actually named Pac-Man after a puck.
Come on, stop it. Everybody knows this. I was surprised at how many good iOS games. I know y'all played Dandy Dungeons, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that one.
It was a fun one.
It was yeah, it's cool. There's a meta narrative on top of it where you're like a game developer who quits his salary job to make games in his underwear, pretty much. And you play the actual game itself. The game itself is sort of like a dungeon crawler, except you have to trace the path you're going to take through each room, with the idea being that you can't retrace your steps and you are trying to get to every square and fight every enemy.
I found the game itself kind of poopy, personally. Like, not my kind of game, but I love the meta stuff. I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, well, is it poopy, or is it not your kind of game, Russ? Because those are two distinctly different ideas.
I think those are the same thing.
Okay.
You're not into poopy games.
Impeccable taste.
I played a lot of this fun
new
iOS.
We're just, like, blazing through, huh? Yeah. Can't even take
a second. I don't want to spend 2 fucking hours doing this show again.
It's a fun thing. It's very cute. The music, it's worth it just... for the intro song, which is absolutely fantastic. Play it with sound. It's really cute. And I agree. The game is not my favorite, but especially when you end up having to grind dungeons a lot to try to get gear. But the stuff on top of it is really cool.
I love RPG shit in games. That was actually something that turned me off of that game. I kind of just wanted like a little puzzler where you had to like route your way through different dungeons, making sure that like you walked over the potion if you were low on hit points before you started fighting the enemy. Like, I was into that shit. I was not into the like, oh, well, this is a 5-star rainbow shell, and if you collect 8 of these, you can upgrade your sword. Like,
and it does have kind of an unfortunate pay to win thing where you can revive in a dungeon if you buy rice balls.
Next, feed the beast. Keep it going.
So, speaking of iOS games, I've been playing this great iOS game, and it's a really well designed one, and it's called Chess.
Talking about Chess.
Did we talk about it last month?
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's really good.
Have there been any updates?
Yeah, they've got this new piece, and it's called The Saboteur. I've just played a lot of it, and it's really good, and I upgraded to the Platinum membership on chess.com, so fucking step two.
What does that give you? Do you get, like, special, like, Twitch icons and stuff?
You get, like, infinite lessons, and, like, you can run these little tactics drills, and that's, like, all I spend roughly 2.5 hours a day rocking a baby, and I have basically now I just spend that time running tactics drills, like trying to get that old ranking up. This is not iOS related, but it is kind of chess related. I hooked up my Oculus, and I got Oculus Touch going and played Super Hot VR. God, did I talk about this last month?
Earth-shatteringly good.
No.
It's fucking it's unbelievably good. It is by magnitudes the best fucking VR thing I have done. Like, it is the best VR thing. It's my new, like, go-to. You have to check this shit out. But I also started messing around with Alt Space, which is sort of the social app that I think is probably the most well-made app for VR of its kind. There's also Rec Room, but Rec Room sucks. Did I
is
talk about this?
Like MySpace?
It's kind of like that, but it's more like Second Life, but not nearly as horny. And I played a game of chess against a dude in this big virtual room. Well, listen, I was playing, and we heard what sounded like cheering and fighting coming from like this theater that was also in this board game space. And we walked over there, and this dad was just showing us his kids' wrestling videos.
What? No.
What?
We played chess, and his high school aged son was doing wrestling. And so while I played chess against this stranger in a board that was as big as I was, this nearby dad explained to me how they score actual wrestling, not like funsy fun WWE. And it was just a really wonderful experience.
Wait, the board was as big as you were.
Yeah, it's like a virtual space, so you can like drag it. It's like it was on some fucking wizard chess shit. Also, I play a lot of desktop tabletop simulator in VR, which is really fun. I played some Codenames, which is a really fun board game, and some Secret Hitler, and all of it really actually performs really well.
All unlicensed,
chess real
I'm
quick
assuming.
Before we move on to actual games.
Yeah, what's up?
I just wanted to talk about chess briefly.
Okay.
What's your end game?
Like, what do you mean?
Like, what are you working towards?
I mean, what do you want me to fucking like challenge Kasparov in a 7-game set for the fate of the world? No, I'm just like, I like playing it, and it's like a fun little puzzle game, and every move is just like a little puzzle that you have to solve. I'm into
also,
that shit.
Like, Freshik, you play shooters. You're no esports champion.
Yeah, why are we doing fucking any of this?
In Call of Duty, I get gold guns if I play enough of them.
Okay, well, I guess.
Oh, you want the unlocks.
You want unlocks is what you're saying.
You want skins.
I mean, you get your ranking goes up, and you play people with higher rankings.
Yeah, not everyone cares about the ranking. You don't get a belt for everything. God.
Okay, so that's the end of Russ's segment for
that's
the show.
That's the end of, Russ is just
no,
opening up his butt
show.
And pooping.
The beast is full.
You should have thought. All right, folks, I'm hearing the beast is full. We got to move on to our real game.
Has anybody played Night in the Woods, though? Because that's one I actually do want to check out and just came out.
I'm working on a review of it, so I can't comment.
Someone at work played it for a stream. I don't want to give their name out, but they literally could not make it past a platforming sequence that happens in the first 5 minutes.
Oh, God, not again.
Oh, no. Too late. This indie platform adventure is too late for us.
You could say they were doomed.
Okay.
So that's who wants to start this month?
I'm going to start.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Okay. Just kind of go ahead and what's your game, Russ?
My game is called Fire Emblem Heroes.
Okay, good.
You okay with that?
That's fine. That's the I want to hear about it because I've heard a lot of chatter about it, but I'm not a big Fire Emblem fan, and I'm curious if this would be more up my alley.
Okay. So Fire Emblem Heroes is, I guess, technically the third Nintendo mobile game to come out. I'm not counting Pokemon Go because Nintendo didn't make that.
Yeah, I was about to say.
But so there was Miitomo, which really wasn't a game at all. It was basically fiery garbage. And then Mario Run, which came out, which was okay-ish.
How frustrating is Miitomo in that they were like, let's release Tomodachi Life, but with less interactivity?
It was terrible. It was the worst.
Also, just real quick about Pokemon Go, they just updated it with second-gen Pokemon, but they only added 80 of, I think 101? I think Gen 2 brought it up to 250-something. Hey, guys, why couldn't you fucking get the other 20? It's been, like, forever since Pokemon Go was released, and you're like, oh, man, we couldn't crack Totodile. We couldn't crack Sentret. We just don't know how to make a Raccoon 3D. What are you talking about?
It would take them... No, there is no amount of Pokemon. They could add 600 new Pokemon on top of the 700 existing. I still wouldn't play that game.
Yeah,
so it really doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
And I think everyone who's, like, quit playing Pokemon is sort of in that boat, like... Nothing would bring them back to it.
Yeah.
But I think like a real Pokemon game.
That might be good.
that'd be fun.
Thankfully, Fire Emblem, which is the third Nintendo mobile game made by Intelligent Systems, which is one of their best developers, is really effing good. It is one of my favorite mobile games I think I've ever played. So it's a free-to-play game, and basically you... summon a variety of characters from the Fire Emblem franchise, starting with the very first game to even the most recent game. And you use those characters in 4v4. Sorry. Sorry. You use those characters in 4v4 battles in, like, much smaller arenas. So generally in Fire Emblem
you repeated yourself, like, I'm going to edit. I just want to make it super clear that that was totally in there.
Oh, but you're going to get the cough out of
I wouldn't make
there, right?
a habit of that.
You're going to get the cough out of there, right?
Oh, yeah, I'll be sure to get the cough out of it for the besties.
I edit out all your stupid coughs.
Justin, edit out the fucking cough.
What? Oh, no, the cough was in. Didn't everybody hear the cough?
Please, Justin, edit the cough out.
I'm going to keep mentioning the cough, so it will be like, it won't even make sense without the cough.
God.
The cough is a key story point in this episode.
Okay. So you have...
See, God, no, we don't need the sequel.
Okay, so you have these smaller maps. Traditionally, Fire Emblem maps are like huge and like 64 by 64 squares. These are really pretty small. I think it's like 4 by 8 or like probably 8 by 8 is probably what it works out to. And but in terms of like the mechanics and how it all works, it's very, very close to classic Fire Emblem. You have the traditional like sword beats axe beats spear, you know, red beats green beats blue, like that, you know, rock, paper, scissors mechanic. Is it work? Why I like it so much is there by having the smaller maps, games play out very fast. You could spend like an hour or more on a single map in like a normal Fire Emblem game. Here, you could finish a map in like 5 minutes, which I think matches mobile really
well.
That's
long. That's a long match if it takes five minutes. Yeah, like in my experience, like they just fucking fly right by.
That sounds hugely appealing to me as someone who's not a huge Fire Emblem person.
I love Fire Emblem, and I played and reviewed Fates last year. Yeah, I think last February. Yeah. And it's exceptional. But yeah, like it is exhausting. Some of the like levels taking 45 minutes to an hour. While you like very carefully move around and like move like two steps forward and then one step back, and always having like your slowest people at the front because they can take the biggest hits, because if somebody dies, that's it.
Yeah.
And that without that restriction, like the game just flies by. Maps. Yeah. Sorry, I'm loading the game up because I wanted to lock down. Maps are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They're 6 by 8. Okay, so 48 squares. Yeah.
So the other thing I like about the smaller maps, and something they don't do in the normal Fire Emblems very much at all, there's a little bit of this, but very little, is positioning is a huge deal. Like, a lot of the characters that you get have abilities where you'll, like, swap positions with another person, or you'll, like, warp to another person, or stuff like that. And because the maps are so small, that positioning makes a huge impact, where you can, like, swap places, like, a mage and a tank can swap places. And it really just like changes the overall flow of an entire game.
I got a unit named Effie. This is like my favorite thing about the game is the positioning stuff. And Effie is this big, like crazy strong, really high defense knight, but she can only move one space. So I can either like work really hard to like keep her at the front line and sort of move the rest of my army very slowly, or she has an ability where I can just fucking kick one of my teammates and it moves them forward two spaces. And using that, like, I can either take this like defensive position, or I can just like move into high gear and just like zerg rush the enemy by putting a combatant like right behind their enemy lines. There's so much like nuance to that strategy.
Griffin, let me ask you, better chess? Do you think it's better chess? Chess 2?
I play it when I'm like, no. I don't. There's like, at first blush, when I was like looking at trailers for the game and getting excited, because I've been looking forward to it. I, first of all, before we knew anything, I was 100% certain they were just going to fuck it right up.
Yes, for sure.
But looking at like the first trailers, it did just kind of seem like a... You mentioned rock, paper, scissors, and that's always been a consideration for Fire Emblem. Like, what is it? Spears beat swords beat axes, or maybe I have that backwards. But I thought that was going to be it. Just like put your sword guy next to the axe guy, and you'll win. But there's the positioning stuff. It adds a lot to it. Everybody has unique skills, and some of those skills can like counteract that rock, paper, scissors system. Like there's skills that completely nullify those bonuses and debuffs. There are ones that sort of go add like another layer, like one that makes you very good at killing armored units, or archers are really good at killing flying units. That has nothing to do with the red, blue, green rock, paper, scissors system. So like even if you're like a blue unit attacking a green unit, if they're flying and you have a way of like hurting flying enemies, then you get bonuses there. So there's like so many different ways to make your teammates play along with each other. And it is way more complex than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it's super, super interesting. I want to hear Plant's story. Plant, tell your story.
No, it's not fun.
I know. That's why
so,
I want
like,
to tell it.
I made the mistake of like reading advice about this game. And like,
oh, did you do the restart shit?
10 things to do before you play this game. And I was like, okay, cool. I trust people. And they were like, delete the game over and over again until you get at least I don't know, five characters with four
two
stars
five-star
each.
Characters is generally what the two yeah. five-star characters is what people tell us.
Yeah, and like
that's
no.
insane. That's it, no way. I wasted, that's awful.
Yeah, I wasted 2 days, kind of like on in my spare time picking at it. I'd be like, oh, I need to go to the bathroom. Maybe I'll do this right now, and it wouldn't work. So then I ended up just like kind of giving up. And I don't really have any love for these characters anyway, so it didn't really mean anything who I had. And then I tried to play, and I don't know, there were other games I could play, so I just didn't.
It's competing with a lot for you. Chris, we can't, I don't know if we can even say what Chris Plant has right now.
Can't say any of the things I'm playing.
But also I will say that I despise Chris Plant for I hope you, Chris, appreciate that it's just temporary until sure. I have the things that you have. But in this moment right now, you are my mortal foe.
I do want to say, like, a lot of people have talked about the free to play nature of this game sure. and how it's pay to win and stuff like that. So as of right now, there's probably about 10% of the game that is 110% pay to win. No question about it. It is pay to win. If you spend $4,000, you can make a team that will absolutely demolish other teams, and that kind of sucks. But they've been really smart about it. So there is like a PvP mechanic where you play other teams, but you actually get matched up against teams that are within your skill range and like stat level. So even though I'm not going to like rank to like top 1,000 in the world ever, because those are all 100% people that have spent a ton of money, I still am able to do PvP every week and rank and get a bunch of feathers and stuff like that. And with the currencies, you can then get 5 stars that you like, and you can elevate people without having to like commit to the free-to-play mechanic, like slot machine mechanic, which
yeah.
is very encouraging, but they're still, I would also say they're very generous with how much free stuff they give you.
Yeah, every day you log in, they give you 2 orbs, which you yeah. need 5 to summon somebody, but you also get an orb every time you beat a level. And I've spent money on the game. I've spent probably at this point about, I want to say about $25. Not proud of that, but at the same time, I've probably played it because it is like, I mentioned this in the last episode, like I really do, I'm not exaggerating, like I rock my baby to sleep like a lot. And so the games I'm playing right now are games I can play with the one free hand I have while I'm doing that. And so I've played, no joke, 30, 40 hours yeah. of Fire Emblem Heroes. Like, I played a lot. And yeah, I'll drop $25 on it. And it wasn't necessarily to get the best guys, although I've gotten some...
Well, because you can't. You have no idea what you'll get out
yes.
of $25.
It's mostly that, like, the more people you have, the more teammates you have, the more options you have, like, the more strategies become available to you. Olivia is a really cool character who has a support ability that just lets somebody else take a second turn, mm-hmm. and that unlocks so much stuff, because all of a sudden, like, the characters that you have that you really like, you can give a second turn. Or if you're in a situation where... there are two like enemies in front of you and you have two heroes that could potentially do some damage, you can like choose which one gets to go again. And there's a lot of stuff like that. There's a lot of layers like that where you can build strategies out of just individual characters. And so like
and a lot of characters like Olivia, for example, and another character, Sharina, are characters you get for free just by like signing yeah. in and doing like an easy mission. So,
yeah,
like,
every day there's a cycling catalog of free heroes that all you have to do is like beat them in a really easy battle, and then you just have them. And they're really yeah. low ranked. You have to like level them up, and it takes a little bit longer. But like, yeah, Olivia, I didn't get out of the Gashapon. I just got her guaranteed for free, and everybody did.
I think it's great. I hope they support it as well as they have in the first month. Like, I think the first month has had like a lot of variety and events and things to keep people engaged. I finished the campaign as well.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of getting to a point where I don't have as much to encourage me to log in every single day beyond the
right.
like, bonus.
I played it every single day since it came out, yeah. and I have. I've gotten that bonus every single day. I've played this game every single day since it came out earlier this month. Yeah. I have now finished every story mission on every difficulty and cleared out all of the missions. And to be honest, PvP, the rewards for PvP, so like I ranked really high in PvP last month because I have a pretty awesome team. I got really lucky.
What was your rank?
I don't know. I had like 3,900. That was my score. Nice. Yeah, it was really good. And I did really, really well because I put together an awesome team and they are at max level, like super powerful. And there aren't that many substitutions I think I would even make. Like I don't even go to the Gashapon to draw like, oh, I need this person for my team. Like my team's pretty much perfect. I've beaten every one of the single player levels. And the reward for PvP, if you do like I really, really, really well, like I did for the last season, I think seasons are like 4 days, you get one 15th of the amount of currency that you need to boost.
It's 10%. You get 10%.
Okay.
You can pretty easily get 2,000 feathers.
It would take 40 days of playing this game and maxing out your PvP ranking to like get enough currency to boost up a unit to like the max star rating, which is how they measure potential. Like the PvP rewards are fucking shit. And now I've beaten every level that gives you free orbs. So like there isn't much left in the game for me to be drawn into. Now, this is the same thing I said about like Destiny, which is I played Destiny forever as a value proposition. Like Destiny paid off, but I hit a point where it's just like, well, I have all the best stuff and I've beaten all the stuff and I've spent a lot of time playing this game, but I'm bummed that there's like not, yeah. I guess I'm just bummed that there's not more to it. And while the PvP stuff is cool, it is really, really, really unrewarding. So hopefully right. They can fix that too.
So that's Griffin's game. Russ, what do you think?
I did. I wanted to bring this game, but
Griffin
Russ
really did. I didn't play as much as Griffin's game, so I think it made more sense. But I have played a ton of this game, and it's excellent. Justin, you should definitely, definitely play it. Speaking as a master of mobile taste,
yeah,
I think
I'll,
you should
play. I'll try it. Can I talk about a game?
Yeah.
Sure. Yes.
Pretty big departure from that. For Honor is a new game from Ubisoft. Ubisoft? Doesn't matter.
Ubisoft, how do you do this? How do you do this?
Ubisoft, right?
Ubisoft.
Ubisoft. It's a new game from them. and it is I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. It's a multiplayer action game, sort of think of it as structurally, it's not unlike Battlefield 1. Let's start there.
Let him go.
I'm curious. Okay. I want to follow this out.
Okay. Well, okay, Russ.
Go on.
I'll let you guys blather on about a mobile game for a half hour. I feel like the least you could do is show me the same currency. Structurally, it's sort of like Battlefield 1 in that it's primarily a PvP game, at least at its core, and the single-player component, which there is one, is actually broken up into different campaigns to expose you to the different roles you can play, hence the parallel to Battlefield 1 specifically, but it is a sword-fighting game and sort of like that hand-to-hand weapon combat game. It's not just swords. There's, you know, double sword, sword and shield, axes, what have you. And the focus is really on those one versus one encounters. The smartest, coolest, best thing about For Honor is when you have two people facing off in a duel. You hold one of the triggers in to stay focused on the person, and then your right stick controls both blocking and the direction of the attacks you want to make. So if you see the person that you're fighting with, you see their directions too. So you can see if they're about to attack from the left, the top, or the right, and you can block in kind. But that's also where they're blocking. So if you want to attack them, you want to do it in a different direction. So if you're blocking, you want to match them.
What is that boxing game, Fight Night?
It's
kind of like that.
That's not
Battlefield 1 meets Fight Night.
Justin, do you mind if I throw one other thing in?
Please, yeah.
Yeah, it feels to me, and I love this game, but like Bushido Blade extrapolated to a modern blockbuster.
No, like, yeah, for it, sure. Like, it's that level of focus on like the import of individual moves, like being able to really devastate enemies and in turn be devastated by some ill-timed blocks, and there's also parries. If you do a strong attack at the same time you're blocking, you can parry. There's throws. You can break your enemy's block, and so it becomes very. There's definitely like a strategic element to it in the combat, and the combat, like the one-on-one combat, is really the best part of it. And they extrapolate it in some interesting ideas. There's one fight, for example, where you, while you're fighting the main guy, he is sending wolves after you that you have to block at the same time while you're attacking him. And blocking the attacks from the wolves gives you a chance to attack them and thin their ranks out some. So that stuff is all really neat in the single player campaign. The story is a little, I would say, threadbare, but you know it's functional. In multiplayer, it's really interesting, and I have really mixed feelings about it because that mechanic extrapolated out is you start to understand why multiplayer and shooting has been tied together as often as it has, because multiplayer with the sword combat is, in some instances, it works great. There's like a capture the flag kind of mode, or I guess more specifically sort of zone control. And if you run to the zone where there is one person guarding it and it's you versus them and whoever wins is going to take control of the zone, that's very cool. But I feel like just as often for me, because the combat is balanced in the way it is, there's no surprise attack. There's no, like, you're not going to really get, if two people come after you, you're pretty much done. I mean, you're maybe if you were super duper crazy skilled, in which case, you know, you would hope you would be paired against people who are similarly skilled. But like, if two people come after you at the same time, it is completely unenjoyable
because you essentially can't see where they're blocking or right.
Right. You can only track one person at a time. Right. So you can theoretically fight one person all day long, but if you, the second you have two, you can't track where the other person's attacking from. So it's completely luck of the draw.
You know what that's like?
What?
Real life, baby.
Fair enough. There's some interesting meta stuff layered on top of the PvP. You choose a faction, be it Knight, Viking, or Samurai, and those three factions are vying for control of the world. When you win, you get resources that you can use to sort of buffer your faction's forces in a certain area. And winning those modes, you know, gives you more forces so you can try to attack areas that your enemy control. And then at the end of a season, which I think is like 10 weeks, then whichever faction is doing the best, the people in that faction get better rewards. And I guess there's going to be an ongoing, they say the world will be forever changed by the events of each season. So I guess there'll be some impact to some ongoing narrative after those 10 weeks. There's an off season period and then it starts back up again. But for me, my experience, I played like the entire first campaign. I played the Knights campaign, and then I hopped into multiplayer, which is actually kind of fun because you have to be able to do multiplayer at all, you have to beat your faction leader just to get in, which is sort of a way of just putting you through your paces to make sure you can hang. But for every time that I had a really cool one-on-one with somebody, I had an equally unenjoyable and infuriating two-on-one, which is just always always miserable. And I don't know what the solution to that is.
There is a one-on-one mode, though, right?
Yeah. You can do that. That is definitely a mode. And there's like traditional death matching and stuff. It feels, the best parallel I can draw is like it has that sort of Assassin's Creed kind of thing of, oh, wow, there's some really, you guys really laid down the groundwork of some interesting mechanics here. But there are just some big, big caveats, I think, that did not get worked out for this one.
Yeah, I am genuinely excited about it as an esport, for the reasons that you mentioned, because it is punishing when you get those two-on-one situations. So I'm really excited to see what that looks like as a team game. And also, it has a thing going for it that, I mean, next to no games, I think, have outside of something even like Street Fighter, which is the language is immediately readable. Like, even if you don't play the game, communicating like how the defense versus offense works in the game is pretty easy to understand with a quick first impression. So I think it's gonna, I hope it'll stream really well and that it'll be an interesting game to actually watch, more so than a lot of games of that ilk. And also because everybody does essentially have to get in close combat, it centers the action in a way that sometimes shooters don't. Where it's, it's hard to really tell what all is going on the battlefield at one time.
It is really cool. One of the cool facets of that is that you can call for help at any point on the battlefield, and a map indicator pops up. And because the pace is slower than it would be with a shooter, you actually can make a judgment on, like, well, I could probably get over there and definitely, like, turn the tide of that fight. Like, I would be a big asset because basically if there's two of us, that person's going to die. So, like, do I have time to get over there and actually make a difference? And that's cool because that never happens in a shooter. It's just the action moves too quickly. So that is interesting. Russ, did you play For Honor?
I did. I played it briefly. I played like for 20 minutes or so. So I get the idea, and I really appreciate the riskiness of it. Like, it is a risky game, and I think artistically, like, it looks really cool. What really put me off of it, weirdly enough, was the UI. Even though I agree with Plant that it's like very clear what's going on, it's like very bright and very like esportsy, like ESPN, or like a lot of like bright, super colorful overlays.
Yeah,
and I found that like really took me out of what was going on, because the scenes themselves are like look like very gritty, realistic like war scenes, but it's like this like Rocket League presentation, which is just so bizarre to me, and I kind of found that off-putting.
Yeah, I know exactly what you said. The language that is used to describe this game on the back of the box was not like join an epic fantasy battle between knights and samurai. It's like a lot of esports type language about different move sets and et cetera, et cetera. It's definitely like that's the focus. If you get into it, I could definitely
How bad are the kills? Is it buckets of guts when you cut them up?
If you finish if you kill somebody with a heavy attack, it gives you the option to execute them. Which, if you do that, you like it's like a big flourish. You chop their head off or something.
Pull all their bones out. Pull all their bones out. If I had worked on the game, I would have let you do that.
Just pull their bones off their body.
Yeah, it's funny. Like when they do it in Mortal Kombat, it's like funny. And like I play other games, and it's like they don't let you like pull their bones out or anything. And it's like,
into a baby.
You're turning them into a baby. You're just like pull their guts out of their butt.
If people get really deep into it, I could see it having legs. I could also see this sort of being the sort of game where I will say this: I've had trouble matching even now. On PS4, I've had trouble matching with people who are comparable skill to me. I think if they continue with this game, if you want to play it, I would start now. Because I think it's the sort of game where, like, if in 3 weeks, in a month, the people that are still playing it are going to be absolutely savage. Like,
by comparable skill, do you just mean, like, they're much better than you?
The ranking. I mean, also, yes, by extension, but also the ranking.
I also think competitive fighting people already seem to have an advantage. I've seen a few people I follow on Twitter who do Street Fighter posting like 97% kill, but I guess it's not like a KD ratio there, but like 97-2, like just absurd numbers after playing it for like a weekend. I have a feeling that it might even be a little too late for it, unless you are really into that hardcore thing.
Well, the maps are small. Like, it's only, what, 4v4, right?
Yeah, and there's cool ideas in that the map that you play on is dictated by where the front of the fight is between your faction and the other faction. So, like, those are the maps that you play where the battle is actually, like, taking place in the in the metagame, which is kind of a neat idea.
Yeah, but with 4v4, at that point, if you have two people on there that are, like, pretty good, you're toast at that point. Like, they're just going to work together and just like annihilate maybe a bunch of like randos that are playing together on the other side.
If you have any sort of coordination or teamwork, like, absolute brutality. I think it would be.
And I don't know that you can't really blame them for that necessarily, although it does speak to like maybe they shouldn't matchmake teams against solo players. But I know like Rainbow Six is the same way at this point, where like it's so coordinated that there's really no, like, if you don't know what you're doing, you are effed. Like, you might as well be standing still.
I think the push in multiplayer lately for a lot of the big franchises has been towards making letting everyone have the feeling that they are contributing, even if they're not the best skill wise. I think you saw that in Titanfall, definitely, and obviously in Overwatch.
Overwatch, yeah.
And this is not that game. If you can't beat someone in a fight, then you are a drain on the team.
Yeah. I wanna come back to this game in like 6 months because I think it is something that would be worth at least checking back in on. I'm reminded of, you mentioned Rainbow Six, but Siege was like a fine game when it launched. It felt like the same thing of like people are already pretty good at it. How do you join? And now it is like an entire esports scene. I mean, it's crazy what they've done with that game. And I kind of am curious if they'll do something here where we could check in on it before the end of the year and it's basically a different game altogether.
I would be surprised if it maintains an audience, but I could be.
But that's what people said about Siege. Like, it had nobody on the servers at first, and now it's crowded.
Yep, we'll see.
Yeah.
Halftime is here.
Boom, boom.
And a lot of people are just buzzing about halftime, just really excited to know what the boys are going to get into this time.
Whose butts are they going to rip out?
No, you don't rip the butts out. You rip the guts out of the butts. I have this whole design document, and I've sent it. I thought I'd send it to pretty much everybody at this point. But
do you guys want to talk about the Switch? Do you guys want to talk about the Switch again? Because that's just getting funnier and funnier.
I'll say this about the Switch: people are. I can't. Every fucking day, I wake up to 40 tweets from people saying, "Oh, the case is so much bigger than the game cartridge." Hey, dummies! Do you want a fucking game case that's like the size of a postage stamp? Really think about what you're saying, dumb dumb.
That game case is the perfect example of like weird game blog stuff where it's like 3 years ago, game cases, they don't have the feel that they used to have. They're so flimsy, and where's my instructions? And then like a year later, it's like, I can't believe they came with a piece of paper. They're wasting paper. And now it's they're too big? Andy Rooney's had enough.
The cool thing about the Switch game cases is even though they're pretty big, consider that you can put all one game that you're going to be playing on the Switch in that case. So it should fit.
Wow.
Zelda and Snipperclips. That's two. Step to this.
Snipperclips is not a launch game.
It's not?
It's not out yet.
I think it is, right?
I don't think it is.
Oh my God, just stop the podcast.
All right, I'm editing this out. Wink.
Snipperclips podcast. I just Snipperclips podcast. There is one though. There is a Snipperclips podcast. This game has a lot of buzz.
It says it's due for in March 2017. Though I don't see a specific date.
Who knows?
I don't think it's an actual launch game. I think it's just Dance, Zelda, and some other garbage.
Wow.
Not to generalize.
What about 1-2 Switch?
Oh, yeah, 1-2 Switch is
that console. Silence everybody? Oh, my gosh.
I kind of I mean, 1-2 Switch, I don't know, man.
You played it here or not. You've tugged, should we pull back you've the tugged on that invisible tee. You love that shit.
1-2 Switch, there are ads on. I've seen ads in the mass media for 1-2 Switch, and it is like. It is everything short of a Nintendo executive like popping his head up from the bottom of the screen, like, huh? Remember?
Well, we should also say, like, maybe this is pulling back the curtain a bit, but, like, Nintendo 100% is not going to give us that game early. They are working with some mainstream outlets that will, like, so we could have, they could have, a review or something out right when the Switch launches, but, like, we definitely will not. And I think a big reason is because they know that anyone who's played a video game will not be super interested.
They want this. They want the Switch to be so synonymous with Zelda, almost in the way that old people in 1987 called the Nintendo Entertainment System Mario. They would say, plug your Mario into the TV and let's spool that red man up. Let's spool up that good red-hatted plumber boy. Come on. Oh, no. You unplugged the Mario and the game died. Like, that is essentially what they want. They want you to think of this as your portable Zelda.
It is a very convincing argument from Nintendo's perspective, right? Like, a Zelda is a huge sell, and your only counter to that is, well, what if people could just buy it on Wii U, and then Nintendo could say, oh, nobody bought one of those. Don't worry. That's not going to happen.
I saw a quote from a GameStop executive. He was like, oh yeah, the attach rate on the Switch is way higher. People are definitely buying game for this thing. Like with the Wii U, it came with a pack-in game, which was arguably the best launch game there was, and then no games for quite a while.
I like Zombie U better, but that's fine. Zombie U is a really good game? Yeah, Zombie U is a really good implementation of the
hardware. Millions of people bought it.
No,
they didn't.
I mean, like, you don't have a point. That sales don't mean quality, Russ.
I think it is funny that he's talking about the attach rate when no one bought any games for the Wii U. So, of course, there was a
lot. I'm trying to remember the first Wii U game. I mean, Nintendo Land was pretty sick.
Right, and that was a pack-in.
It was a pack-in, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember. Cannot recall.
There was like there was a Mario game at launch. It was the new Super Mario Brothers side scrolling game that wasn't very good.
No, it wasn't, was it?
No. No, it wasn't. It was a poop.
It was B tier.
B tier.
Anything else we want to talk about in this very, very negative, very is anything anybody's excited about right now?
We're going to GDC. Mm-hmm. Anything at GDC?
Yeah.
I'm not going.
No.
Yeah, no, you're staying
home. No, I'm not going to do that.
Hey,
we could talk about something. This is something we could talk about that is a little bit old, but I think it's been since the last time I recorded. E3 opened the public. What do you guys think
about
that? Yeah.
What do you mean, no? I think that's whatever.
Yeah,
no.
I think it's fine.
It's a scam.
It is kind of. Like, yes. Here's the thing. We should get is Travis McElroy, because he went to E3 last year, and Justin and I got to hang out with him a little bit. I mean, obviously, we're super, super, super busy whenever we're there. Wait, it wasn't last year, was it, Juice? When did we hang out with Travis at E3? I guess maybe 2 years ago.
It was 2 years ago because I wasn't there. Yeah,
that's right. Travis, it was his first time going, and he was so disappointed because it was like, "What did you do?" And he's like, "Well, I stood in line to watch a video of Mafia 3, and the line took an hour and a half, and the video was 8 minutes long."
It's interesting because I could see from the organizer's perspective, as somebody who I did not go to the most recent one, but the one before that, I could say pretty authoritatively, there was some room. There was room for additional humans, I would say. Yeah.
Their room wasn't even the issue. Like, as Griffin said, like, the more and more every year they take more and more away from the floor, like, playability wise. Like,
so
they just are not stations.
Yeah, imagining like an E3 where at every booth there's just row upon row of
that's
playable machines.
That's PAX is what you're thinking of.
PAX is what you're thinking. I will say this. Sony is usually pretty good about laying out.
Let's talk about, like, realistically, because there may be some people who secured some tickets to this thing who listen to this podcast, what to expect. So, like, Nintendo, there's it's going to be tough to get into Nintendo, but if you can, there's usually
shit. Oh my gosh, wait, sorry. Do you think they're going to tie Nintendo Switches to young women again?
Oh, my God, I hope not.
They did that in the past with the 3DS. Right.
I think it'll be an awkward E3 for Nintendo because their thing will be out already.
It could potentially be
all their games.
It could be a potentially triumphant E3 for Nintendo if they fucking show up with, like, any surprises, because at that point, like, I will be watching Nintendo very intently because I have just spent money on their thing and I would like there to be more stuff on it, thank you, because at that point I think I will have 100%ed Zelda and I'm ready for fresh meat.
All they need to do is just have Mario playable and people will be over the moon excited. Like, that's it.
Sony does great. Sony has, like, rows. Sony really does have rows and rows of, like, pretty much all their shit. Like, big first party things that they announce at the show, that's mostly going to be for press up in the
and there's lines. You could, like, wait in line for a little demo, little booth.
Yes, but there's lots of, like, they have a ton of indie games, like tons and tons and tons. Like, We Happy Few was playable, I think, in their booth, maybe in Microsoft. Microsoft more and more is becoming more like this too, where you can just go play basically any Xbox One game that was talked about at the show. Most third-party companies, Capcom is pretty good about letting you play stuff. Square Enix is actually pretty good about letting you play stuff, but
Bethesda has a lot of statues that you can get photos.
Yeah, that's the other. Like, pretty much most other companies are come sit in our dark theater. EA is the worst about this, I feel like. Like, come sit in our dark theater for a while. Oh, you're excited about The Sims 4? Come sit in this dark theater. Wait in line for 45 minutes, come watch our, 8-minute long presentation and then get the fuck out of here.
I think if you're there for, you live in LA and you're there for a day, I don't think it's the worst thing, but
no, I just set expectations to low and assume that you're not going to see the things that you actually want to see.
And if you do want to see like the playable things that are there and actually playable, It's like an amusement park. You're gonna like to, if you want to ride the big ride, like you are going to ride fewer rides throughout the day because you are going to be waiting in a lot of lines.
And broadly speaking, don't expect there to be like good and bad times to get in the line. Just get in the line and hang on for dear life because it
and also
will be
recognize that there is a second E3 happening on like a, well, there's several E3s happening, but there is a judges E3. And judges, judges. What? I think it's the dumb. What can we
that
not?
That doesn't really happen anymore. I mean, it sort of does, but not really anymore.
I mean, there
it used to.
Yes, there are. There are like, there are events. There are things that like I, a press person, have shown up to like appointments at E3, and it's like, oh, you're not a judge for Polygon, so you can only watch us play this. You can't actually play it. But there are other strata of like like. There's another strata of accessibility to this stuff where, like, yeah, if you're a judge, then you can play Breath of the Wild. Just come on upstairs and just come play it. So, like, there is like another layer that is, or if you're Kanye, right? There is another layer that is like what you want, which is like, oh, I actually want to go and play all the games.
Well, one last bit of advice before we move on to our next game: don't eat at the Galaxy Cafe.
Oh my God!
There, go across the street. There's food trucks. It'll be fine. Don't eat. You're gonna pay $12 for a slice of prosciutto, and it's no bueno.
Go across the street. Go to the fucking.
You got a layer on top of that.
Go to the Devolver Street Party and get like some street food and like play
some. Open to the public though?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Get coffee before you go because the line for the Starbucks at the convention center is
it's a disaster.
Utter lunacy. Let's talk about
Do my game because I don't want to end on my game because I feel like I'm gonna be kind of an anticlimactic presenter.
Yes. Is your game Neo?
Get it.
It is Neo, yeah. Yeah. I will state I have and I'm not complaining, but I have about 1 hour of gaming time. Throughout the week, I used to play games all day and night, all day because I wasn't doing I wasn't doing a lot of work at work, and now I do very much work at work, making all the great video content that the people crave. And at night, I am hanging out with my family, and so I just don't have that much time. So I have not played a lot of Neo. But I really like it, and it is something I'm gonna return to. I think
I put some good time into it. I put about 6 hours in.
That's about what I've done. So Neo is it's a Dark Souls, and I feel like that's a pretty ubiquitous comparison, maybe a lazy comparison, but fucking holy shit, it's Dark Souls by way of Team Ninja, and I really think that's all you kind of need to know, like. Imagine something with like the speed and combo focus and really punishing nature of like a Ninja Gaiden game, and then sort of layer on top of that a structure that is very Dark Souls, where you have checkpoints that you can rest at to level up and spend the souls, which in this game is called Amrita. That you have acquired while playing, but if you die, you drop all of it, but you have one chance to go get it, and every time you do hit up one of those shrines to pause and level up, all of the enemies respawn, and so there's always something like, there's always things to
at
fight.
At this point, is this like a Not Another Teen Movie situation, where there's just like, like, how do you think, what is his name, Miyazaki, who created Dark Souls?
Yeah.
What do you think he thinks?
I don't know.
You think he's pissed?
I don't know.
It's
extremely fucking Dark Souls. Like, yes, absolutely. But I don't think that's necessarily like there are like 15 major structural things that it apes from Dark Souls. But like at this point, like I feel like so many of those things are so ubiquitous. Like for action RPGs, they are so ubiquitous that like Dark Souls is like maybe the most important game franchise of the last decade. Like I cannot think of anything that has so completely transformed like how an entire what like our expectations of an entire genre are. This just happens to be one of those games that is like really, really pretty identical. But because of that, like Team Ninja Gaiden aspect to it, it feels like totally different. On top of all of that, like good tried and true action RPG stuff that this game borrows from the Soul series, you have really, really fast combat using several different weapon specializations. The game is set in the Sengoku era of like Nobunaga and all that stuff. So there's like a historical aspect to it, but like it will be giving you sort of characters from Sengoku history, but then also one of them will have a magic cat spirit that they use to like cast spells and shit. But all of the weapons are like, you know, katanas, or you can do, dual katanas. There are spears. There's like a chain sai weapon. You can use, bows and flintlock rifles. And there are different specializations and different skills that you can unlock for each weapon class. And one of the really cool things, the two like sort of defining features of combat is there are multiple stances, that you can change between at will, and each one has different moves and different combos and different skills for each of the different weapon categories. So you can come at an enemy with like a high katana stance to try and like just go really, really slow and aggressive, but those moves cost a lot of energy. Or you can go low, which is a really good fast defensive position to be in. Or you can go sort of medium, which is better for like taking on multiple enemies at once because it's a lot of sweeping attacks. The whole time you have to be managing your ki, which is very much like stamina in a Souls game. It is stamina. But you can do what's called a ki burst. Key pulse. Where Justin's on point. Where after you do an attack, you can time out pressing the R1 button. It's a PS4 exclusive. You press the R1 button, and you will recover a portion of your key much faster. And you basically have to do that if you want to live. And it really requires you to like combo your shit together and do everything with basically flawless timing. There are also some other benefits, like you can combo out of a key pulse into other things. There are yokai, which are not the adorable versions of Japanese folklore ghosts that you would see in a yokai watch, but like really fucking
elebits,
like scary ass demons that are really, really powerful, that generate these zones that they, when they're standing in them, they are empowered by them. You can use a key pulse to like get rid of those. My favorite thing about the game is how it handles magic, which and what's the other, there are ninjutsu skills that you can get as well, and whenever you unlock those using the skill points that you earn by not by leveling up, you do get those points by leveling up, but you can also get them just by doing the shit. So like if you use your sword and fight a lot, you will get points that you can unlock combat abilities with. You use those to unlock spells in this game are kind of just like guaranteed item summons that you will have every time you go to a shrine. So instead of getting like, I haven't unlocked a like ranged attack spell yet. I don't even know if there's anything like that in the game, but you can unlock skills that every time you rest at a shrine, you will start out with like two fire talismans that you can use on your sword. And then all of a sudden your sword has like a fire element on it, and it's just guaranteed. Or you can get one that let you spawn with 7 kunai shuriken that you can use to like attack enemies at range, or like little blinding bombs that you can throw down. And so like it's an interesting approach to inventory. Like I always struggle with games that require you to like be judicious about inventory, because I'm always too prudent with it, and I feel like I like reached the end of the game with an inventory stuff full of stuff that would have been way more fun to use had I been playing. And this game kind of circumvents that with these systems where just like you spawn in and guaranteed you have all of these fun toys to play around with, because it is how you have decided to spec.
The
one thing I was going to say that kind of put me off to it a little, first of all, I'm not like a huge fan, just like, I guess, of that time period. I don't know. I've seen a lot of games in that time period, and it just like doesn't grab me super well, but like that's a taste thing. I totally appreciate. The one thing that kind of put me off was that unlike Dark Souls, this follows the model of Ninja Gaiden insofar as like the levels are discrete levels. Like they do not interact with one another. They do not interconnect. There's not like one giant map. And that kind of bummed me out in the sense that like I didn't feel like I had as much ownership of the world, I guess you could say. Mm.
It's weird. You play for a long time before you actually get to that point where you can unlock the open world. You have to beat a pretty rough boss before you get to that point. And for me, it was honestly where I kind of lost interest. I was really enjoying the combat. Is really fun, and also it's in a way it's harder than Dark Souls. I think like enemies tend to hit harder, and I think there's a lot more to keep in your head at any one given time in terms of different stances, et cetera, et cetera. But it's also more forgiving when you die. Dying returns you to a shrine, but it just doesn't hurt as bad. You lose I'm not going to call them souls. You lose your souls, yeah, basically, souls. To continue the parlance. But it doesn't hurt in the same way. It's more forgiving, I think. In that perspective, the problem that I had with it, honestly, is that it just, especially once you get to that point where you unlock the open world, it just bogs down with systems so hard, like just system upon system, like especially when it comes to weapons and weapon management, there's like durability.
Loot is a disaster in general.
It's a nightmare.
In this game.
There's familiarity with each weapon that is not particularly well explained. And then you can deconstruct weapons, but you can also inherit the abilities from one weapon into a new weapon, and then you can craft weapons with those weapons. Like it, and then armor has a lot of like there are different versions of armor pieces, so you really have to like you can't tell at a glance if something is better or worse. You really have to like dig in and look at the numbers and see if it's an improvement for you or not.
How much do you think is like just because you're familiar with Dark Souls and the terminology for things? Like when Dark Souls came out, no one knew what the hell like humanity was, for example. Like,
well, yeah,
know.
But like I am fairly familiar with the Soul series, and I found it like inscrutable. It almost feels like they were trying to layer things, like they were trying to layer on differentiators that were like not necessary, because the core game is
fucking tight, but
really
it's
really good. And it also I'm with Russ in a sense that the having discrete levels, I think, removes a sense of like when you play a Souls game, the only time you can breathe is when you're at a bonfire. Then you can like, okay, take a breath, reexamine, you know, take a second, and then you're right back out in it, and that's the only respite you get. It really does break the intensity, I think, a little bit to like, you finish the level and then you get a ranking on the level and then
the surprise of it, where like you're in this old pirate colony and you beat the boss there and you like go through a tunnel and all of a sudden you're in a fucking volcano and it's like, whoa, what? You don't get that transition really.
I would also say there is a huge difference, and this maybe isn't that different from Dark Souls, but there is a huge difference between the different weapons and what you can do. I had one boss that I tried, the first boss actually, that I tried probably 15 times to beat with dual swords and I think a single sword, which was the two, you can have sort of two weapon combos at any one given time, but you put a lot of your resources into how good you are at those weapons. That's what you sort of spend your upgrades on. There's like the skill upgrades, but there's also upgrading your proficiency with weapons and giving new abilities. And those are all from the same resource pool. So you really have to pick weapons and specialize in them. And the first boss I tried and tried and tried and tried with my weapon combo. The first time I tried with an axe was just really slow and hits really hard. I beat him the first try, which that seems really scary to me if I'm on a later level and I don't have my axe abilities. You know, if I haven't put any points into that, that sounds really daunting to like, well, I'm just not good with the weapons I need to beat this boss. Yeah. That sounds really demoralizing.
It,
I feel like
it has made some amazing speed runs. Have you watched any of the videos?
So people have already beaten the game. It took Phil 80 hours to finish the game. And there's a speed run for that game that's about an hour and a half right now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and while the guy is doing it, he's just talking through all of this. Like, it's him sprinting and, like, reflexively playing through it, but yeah. largely just being like, okay, I open the menu for, like, 5 seconds, and I see this, 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 and this. How can I arrange those? Okay, I'm going to do this with my head. No, no, no. I'm going to use this. And then, oh, yeah, I'll use this weapon and this buff. Okay.
People are still watching a game get routed like that is the most exciting shit. Yeah. Like, I do want to say, because I feel like we've made it sound like a shittier version of Dark Souls, and I don't think that's accurate. I think there's definitely some of that, the big tonal stuff that Dark Souls not only does better, but that Neo doesn't really do at all. But I will also say it is fun as fuck to play. Like, the combat in the game is every like fight is really meaningful, and you have to be on top of your game. Like, that is very much like Dark Souls, but like, it is so fast and fluid and like just slick as hell. Like, it just I've been enjoying just like running around and fighting shit, which I haven't really gotten that fatigue that I get in Dark Souls, where like I've been in this area for so long and I've been fighting these same dudes, and I'm just like, I'm ready to move on. God, where can I find a new weapon? Like, I'm so exhausted with this weapon. Like, I haven't run into any of that, because it's really, really, really fun to like run into a big group of dudes and like slice your way out of it.
Yeah, I can transition to our next game off of that. Because I think the game that I brought is very similar in that both studios I feel like have been stuck on franchises that maybe have lost their glisten a long time ago. And then they got to make a new franchise in a genre they weren't used to, and they, for the most part, nailed it. And yeah. Mine is Horizon Zero Dawn from Guerrilla Games, best known for making Killzone.
For popular bad franchise, Killzone.
Yeah, for a decade. They made those games.
I interviewed some of those some of those devs during a Killzone Shadowfall event in Cologne during Gamescom, and the like joy that I think that was when they first started talking about like, we're working on a new IP. The fucking elation that they had when like and no joke, like I wish I'd held on to the interview, because it was seriously like, yeah, so Killzone Shadowfall, you get different loadouts, and there's one that lets you see enemies through walls. And it's like, oh, okay, so what do you guys have? This looks pretty much done. Are you guys moving on anything next? And like, okay, so next, we can't talk about it yet, but...
Yeah.
I used to hear, or maybe I said it, I don't know, but maybe one of you guys did, I don't know. But Killzone fans are sort of like the Canadian girlfriend from high school. Like, oh, yeah, she exists. Yeah, no, no, no. She's real. She's definitely real. No, no, no. They're out there. Somebody's buying those fucking games. Like, somebody was buying them.
But I don't know anyone. What's amazing about that studio is that they made a shooter, as you said, for 10 years that never felt good. Like, you could, it never felt
very good. I get also confused with Resistance, although they did make a very good Resistance.
The third Resistance rules
is very, very fucking good.
Anyway, so
also,
Horizon.
Lucky secret, Killzone 3 is actually okay. Anyway, I'll drop that little nugget in there. No, it feels like what they did was they got trashed for a handful of things for 10 years that were not entirely within their control, because...
That's bullshit.
That's true. If you have to make a franchise and you're married to the property and all the characters within it,
yeah,
that's kind
of
out of your control.
Of the franchise, the story of Killzone, granted, was super shitty and no one.
No,
cared.
That's not true. The story in those games, especially the later ones, weren't terrible. They were at least on par, if not better, than most shooters.
Okay, but I would say there's no explanation for how you could make a shooting game just not feel good.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But, what I would say is the things that they got taken to task for over and over again was the feel of the game, you're stuck making generic combat, there's no color in this world, and the world itself is just not a place anybody wants to spend any time. Yes. And they were like, okay, let's do a game that the thing we prioritize is fixing those things and then see where we go from there. They made Horizon is set in, I think they're calling it post-apocalypse, which I guess is the right way of describing it. It's the apocalypse has happened. Vegetation has taken the earth back. But for a reason that you learn in the game, most of the creatures are robots.
It's like enslaved Apocalypse.
Yeah, kinda, sure. Yeah. For people who played that game. Yeah.
Six people that played that
game.
It's like ruled too, by the way, as long as we're talking about things that ruled.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And yeah, the world is, I mean, they clearly knew how to make beautiful games. If there was one thing that Killzone did well, is it was like a graphical showpiece. Yes. And they do that here. It is, the closest comparison is The Witcher, basically, in terms of a beautiful, rich, colorful open world.
I'm playing on that. I'm playing on that Pro.
It looks
and maybe
nice.
It's just because I haven't played too much stuff on the Pro, but it's one of the prettiest fucking games I've maybe ever played.
Yeah, for real. They put in characters who, don't get me wrong, the story is not like the most amazing video game story on the planet. It is, for an open world game, pretty darn great, and it, I won't spoil anything, but it goes at the Assassin's Creed concept of like, hey, there was a society before this one, and does it so much better. I mean, it just felt like they really broke down what worked and what didn't work about Assassin's Creed's weird time-bending story and tried to fix it and did a pretty good job at coming close. But most of all, like, the combat is just real nice. It is a game more or less about hunting. There are sequences where you have to fight humans, and those are whatever.
Those are bad.
But yeah, but you start completely underpowered. Just walking from point A to point B is pretty dangerous, and it teaches you to be a bit stealthy. And then over the course of the game, you get all these different weapons, and it's like the reverse of what Watch Dogs 2 was for me. Where Watch Dogs 2 had this amazing premise of like, you're a hacktivist, and you have all these abilities to change the world, but then you end up using guns that are like the most generic guns. This is the exact opposite, in that like half the weapons I used didn't have any damaging powers. They would be used to like tie a beast down to the ground or trip them up, or it would be a freezing buff to like kind of stun them. So most of my loadout at any time would be all these, basically, how can I bring this animal down, then getting close and just start stabbing it in the neck furiously. And it was, I mean, it's fantastic. It's throughout the game, I would say probably every 2 hours or so, I was completely changing the way I would go about hunting, because I would discover just a totally superior way than I was doing it before.
Just on the enemies themselves, like, I don't think I've ever seen more impressive looking enemies in a game. Like,
yeah, the animation animals, of them is,
the like creatures are fucking mind-blowing, like so impressive, that like every little part is moving inside, like you could see their exoskeleton moving, and like the battery is glowing, and
the hitboxes are fucking like wild. Like,
yeah,
you shoot one of the robot enemies in like their eye, it does a lot of damage. And I thought for sure, like, oh, as long as I shoot it sort of around the eye, I'll get that bone. No, you basically have to get it right in there, because every other part of the thing is like something that can be pried off and like recovered as a resource. It's really,
or,
really,
or as
impressive.
A weapon. Like, yeah, the later you get in the game, you start fighting these huge beasts that seem, there's just no shot. And the game plan often is, okay, well, that's the biggest thing in the room. I can either learn an ability by doing these kind of side, the equivalent of Assassin's Creed 2 missions, that allows me to take over these humongous things, or I can find a way to remove the giant cannon on its back, grab it in my hands, and just start like wrecking house. Yeah, I mean, it's, I like I said, I enjoyed it so much, because I just felt like if you're into exploring different ways to go about things, it will let you do that. I know that some people have not liked it because they found a system that worked well enough, and they hammered that until the credits.
Yeah.
But experimenting is like the name
that
of the game.
That seems like so whack to me, though. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, you can play it in a boring way. Congratulations. Like, you found a boring way to play it.
Well,
like,
no, good for you. I'm sorry. No, I'm going to... the onus for that shit is on the developer. Like, I am definitely that type of player where... I mentioned earlier that the all of the human versus human stuff I've done just fucking is really bad. Because
you don't have the tools. You don't have the your tools.
You
aren't
do.
Designed
you
for
can't.
It.
You can use the tools. You can lay down like a bomb trap or whatever, and you can use your like lob bombs at them or whatever. But like 100% of the time, the better thing to do is run backwards, slow down time, and shoot them in the brain, killing them instantly. Nonstop, and it is very, 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 very easy to do that. And like, I honestly feel that way about I have not gotten especially far in the game, but like, I don't think I've discovered anything as good as laying down a shock trap, paralyzing the shit out of them, and then like switching to my super high damage bow, and then like shooting them in their weak points a few times. And that's just for the stronger enemies. The weaker enemies, like, I will, you know, either kill with stealth or just shoot them in the eye, killing them instantly.
Yeah, that won't work in the second half. No, like, okay. The end of the game, I mean, it does become more bomb-heavy, especially there's a final boss fight that is, you're going to need the, like, heavy explosives. But the trick for a lot of the animals, especially, have you even gotten to, like, flying animals?
No.
Yeah, once you get to that, you have to have other techniques.
And it's more, I just think it's like the way, the thing that to me, I'm not somebody who actually does like to experiment. I like to like build up a core skill set and lean on that and kind of overpower it. That's the way I typically play. The thing that I think is really cool about Horizon is that it keeps you on your toes by the fact that even the lowest enemy, if you are not on your game, they can wreck your shop. Like even the weakest enemy can kill at the beginning stages, like until your armor is upgraded and stuff. Even the weakest enemy can kill you in two or three hits. So you really have to be smart about and like thinking about the situation tactically. And also, animals almost always tend to travel in large groups. So that very much is like, well, if I wade into the middle of that, I'm definitely going to die. Like it is going to be very bad. So I have to think tactically about how I'm going to approach it. And unlike a lot of open world games where you can have the same approach over and over again, a lot of the, I would say most of the encounters that I've had have felt very specific. I mean, they felt like they were designed for that moment. There's one of the early ones where you're supposed to investigate this structure, and there are these two gigantic, I forget what they're called, I think Snaptooth or something like that. But there are these two gigantic beasts that are roaming around it, and if you piss one off, the other one is going to get pissed off too. So you really have to like lay out your traps and get ready and be prepared for it. And there's so many like fun little, one of my favorite little things is you can, there are horse type animals that you can override, which basically lets you take control of them and turn them into a mount. But they're almost always in a patch together. And if you override one and turn it into your mount, the other guys get pissed off at you right away and are going to try to kill you. So every time that you, it turns it into this fun little experience where you're not just rolling up and taking a horse, you're rolling up, taking a horse, and then you have to get the hell out before the other horses turn on you and try to kill you. And yeah, there's a lot of little encounters like that that are a ton of fun.
It is fun to try to break it too. There's these cauldron missions essentially culminate with boss battles more or less, but you can trigger them, so it allows you to kind of prepare the room beforehand. And with one of them, I should find the screenshot and share it with y'all, but I laid, I don't know, probably 30 traditional traps and then like another 20 trip lines, so the screen was just covered, and then like woke it up and just shot it in the eye and waited for it to come to me. And like it's just so fun to like play with the game. It's a thing that my beef with Assassin's Creed is I feel like I'm weirdly limited most of the time, and there are so many tools in this to kind of like make the fun if you want to.
I really love also one of the reasons that I'm always put off from games that have like really rich systems of combat is that they're almost always like resource scarcity dictates how often you can do them. So I'm always hesitant. It's like that old, like, I didn't use my potions because I was waiting for the right time and I finished the game with 99 potions. Like you don't run into that with this game because you can make all your ammo basically on the fly. And if you've been smart about collecting resources at all, like you have the stuff that you need to make them, but you do need to make them. And but when I mean on the fly, I mean literally you can be in midair, like fashioning an arrow so that you
fashioning 10 arrows at a time.
Yeah, it's fashioning yeah. 10 it's arrows at a time, so you have the arrow that you need. That is one thing, but that does tie to my one sort of big complaint with the game is there is a lot of picking up stuff. Like there is a lot of looting. I mean, you can't walk 5 feet without seeing a tree you can harvest or a plant yeah. that you need for medicine or a plant you need for wax or whatever. And yeah,
does
every
that get,
enemy
like, expedited later on plant.
There are perks that can like make it so you pull more from those things.
Yeah.
It didn't bother me too much because at least it didn't do the kind of, Far Cry thing where it's like, we want to make sure that you see an animation for it. You can kind of do it on the move. But I still don't know why in these games you can't just walk over the bodies and get everything.
I feel like
resource management is an issue.
There's stuff like that. Like when you do get the mount, right? As you're riding, you're passing by a bunch of resources. So it's like it makes it a lot less pleasurable to ride somewhere when you know, like, oh man, I'm passing up. Even if you don't need them at that exact moment, I don't know when I'm going to want to make, you know, 20 shock traps or whatever. Yeah. So I feel like I should be picking up the stuff. There's room for it.
I never really had an issue with that, though, because I feel like you just always had stuff.
I was pitched on this game as, oh, Griffin, you like the Monster Hunter games. This is basically like that. But, like, this is just another game. I feel like we talked about a lot of games this week that just have really bad inventory problems where I don't know, like, when half the shit that I pick up is like, oh, more desert glass, I don't know what that's, let me go check, oh, I can only sell this. Like, well, why didn't they just drop, you know, rubies? Right. Why didn't they just drop the zinni I need for...
Some of those things are cool, though, because you'll pick up ancient chimes, mm-hmm. and if you look at the image, it's a set of car keys. And stuff like that. Which
no,
is
that's
like,
cool. Actually, and like the artifacts that are the ancient vessels that are all a bunch of coffee cups. Like there's really, really cool.
You should just be able to sell it from the menu then.
My bigger problem is with gear in that like everything is, there's so much of it and it is so, some of it is incremental, but frustratingly like some of it isn't. So like you'll spend a bunch of money buying this blue quality sling and it's like, fuck yeah, new sling. And then the very next vendor you get to is like, oh well, he's got a way doper purple quality sling and I actually need that one to launch shock bolts because mine only does frost and explosion bolts, so well fuck, I just spent all my money on this now already like outclassed sling. Well shit, this
makes
me not
want your mods into it. You can't get those back either.
That's it. Like you can collect mods in this game that have like stat bonuses for your shit, but once you install them, you can't pop them out unless you get a very end game, a very far down perk. And it's like at that point, it's like I don't want to buy anything. I don't want to upgrade anything. I don't want to spend any of my money on anything because now I've had like a few experiences where I buy some shit and then fucking 14 minutes later I find a better thing that I wish I'd saved my money for. Now all my good parts are gone.
It also has one of my pet peeves, which is situational armor, which like my plea to game developers, please, I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to put on my special sneaky armor when I'm going to be sneaking. And I'm not going to put on my special corruption armor when I'm going to be fighting corruption enemies. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to sneak and then I'm going to fight them. And I'm not going to change my armor mid-fight. Please, just like let me feel like I'm wearing the better armor rather than wondering like,
Link,
oh, I should have my
like
other
blue
one.
Blue armor when he's swimming and stuff. Come on. You do that.
I'm not as in love with this game as everybody is, and it makes me feel like I'm a bad person because I recognize it's a very good game, but the shine has come so fucking far off the open world apple for me, and honestly, it actually makes me scared that I might not enjoy the next Zelda game. Like that thought keeps me up at night.
Oh, man.
But it's just like it's I don't feel like I am getting more powerful. I don't feel like my process of playing the game has changed significantly from the first 2 hours of playing the game. And so what I'm left with is this experience where I don't feel like my character, my routine, my playstyle or anything is evolving. And so now I'm just like left with this you're left with this gigantic open world that like I am now less interested to explore because I just don't like, I don't, I don't see how running into this camp of bandits and killing everybody in there is going to really feel any different from like going and killing this big, big hunt that will give me what? Like a horn I can spend on a bow that will be not as good as the bow that I can buy 15 minutes later. Like I have serious, serious structural problems with this game.
I think that's totally fine. How, where are you at in it?
I mean, I'm not super far. I'm like, I'm about 6 or 7 hours in, I want to say.
There's, I mean, this is like the worst, most annoying thing, but there is.
Oh, it really unlocks around 15.
There's a city that you get to when you actually get to the open world. Like the game essentially, it looks like an open world, but it expands to do all of these things where you learn all the skills when you get to the main city, which is annoying because it is pretty long before you get
there. It's just, a lot of this is my own preference these days because I really don't, I don't have that much time to play games anymore. And this used to be my jam. Like if you had asked me in 2010, Griffin, what's your favorite type of game? It's like big ass action RPGs that you can like spend 100 hours playing and MMOs that you can like just spend 1,000 hours playing and like that's fine. But like the games I play now are A, games I can play with one hand, and B, games that are like
nice.
Games that are like efficient with time. And I Horizon may very well be a very good game. It's just like I have no stomach for. I look at a far off point in the no pun intended horizon, and I just think like, well, it's gonna take me like 10 minutes to get there. I'd rather go play another game that, like, in 10 minutes I can go beat a level or something.
This is hilarious to me because I feel like we switched sides. Like, it feels like
we did. We absolutely did.
I just disagree because I think the moment-to-moment stuff in Horizon is so fun. Like, I like doing it. Like, if I run into a herd of enemies, I don't think, like, ugh, drudgery. I think, like, oh, cool. Uh-oh, shit, I really wandered into this one. I got to, on the fly, figure out how to get out of this. I also want to give a quick thumbs up or whatever to Ashley Birch plays the main character, and her performance is really nicely, like, especially for this kind of game, her performance is really nicely understated. She has a lot of like as with any open world game, a lot of talking to herself, etc., and it never feels grating. It always feels like very pleasant and comes from a very sort of realistic place. It never feels.
It's funny
like,
you say that because I literally didn't notice her talking to herself.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like in Tomb Raider where Lara Croft's like, okay, Laura, you got to pull this rebar out of your spleen, and it's like, why are you saying that? Just do it. Just pull the rebar out of your spleen.
She makes interesting in-world remarks that give it a bit more color. Like if she picks up a shock root, like I heard her say, like, ugh, it's sticky. Like, that's an interesting, like, way of communicating one of the senses that I don't normally get while playing a video game.
Uncharted stuff does that.
And her interactions with the characters, the other characters especially, are, like, even though she is the clearly and demonstrably the baddest ass person in the world over and over again, and she'll do badass things in front of people, the attitude never becomes, like, yeah, did that. It's never like egomaniacal. It's always really nicely understated.
Can I give a minor spoiler? I won't say the name of any of the characters or where this falls. It's just a really good moment. I'm going to say it. You can delete it if you want. There is a moment.
You know that, right?
What?
I will not be doing that.
Okay.
Will
not be deleted. I really don't think this is like a huge thing. There is a moment where a very powerful man is into her and like makes a pass on her, and it's not appropriate at that time. And it's not like he's not lecherous or anything. It's just like definitely wrong time, dude. And it gives you the dialogue tree, and all three are variations of essentially like wrong time. And it's so great that it felt like it could have was doing the awful thing that happens in these games where it's like, and cool, now here's the romance that you were waiting for. Sure, it doesn't fit at all in the context of the story, but, you know, there's a woman and a man, and they should be together, I guess, and just totally cuts it off at the knees. And then throughout the rest of the game, that guy's like, yeah, that was real bad. Like, I definitely should not have done that.
But that's the whole dialogue tree system is that, right? Where essentially what you're picking does not make any impact whatsoever.
Yes and no. I mean, it's not huge, but that was the rare time where it was pretty much like all three were like pretty clearly the same thing.
Sure.
You at least say different things.
Okay, all right, listen, guys. This has gone on long enough.
Yeah.
These are all exceptional games, but we have to pick the most exceptional one of the batch. And I feel like we may have more of a disagreement than we did last time. But where's everybody sitting?
Griffin and I are holding hands above Fire Emblem and hugging.
I was really harsh on Horizon Zero Dawn. I think it's a good game. I have problems with, like, I'm very, very critical of the sense of progression you get while playing a game. Like, that's just has always and will always be, like, an important thing for me to, like, enjoy a game. And I haven't enjoyed that in Horizon, but I also recognize, like, it is a fucking achievement. But man, I've played so much Fire Emblem Heroes, and so I think it's probably the best mobile game I've played in a few years.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So I'm definitely sorry, y'all. I have the exact opposite problem. Like, for me, like, I can't get into the mobile games.
No, I don't feel any joy or reward. The reason you're put off is because you obsessed over it and you re-rolled and you burnt yourself out.
Justin, promise me you won't do that shit.
Don't do that, Justin. When you play the game, don't do that shit.
I won't do that. I'll just keep playing Dandy Dungeons. But the point I wanted to make, for me, I play a lot of games. At least try most games. And for me, it was such a relief to play something that for me was as sort of like joyful as Horizon is. Like, it just makes me happy to play it. It's moment to moment fun, and it's smart, and it doesn't make me cringe with, like, the story stuff. But the combat is really inventive. It has you attacking problems in different ways that really require strategy. I've had some amazing encounters just because the set of tools is so diverse. And it just moment to moment is a joy to play, and it is a huge relief to play, because I have not felt that way from a AAA game for quite some time, actually.
I'll say this: I'm totally willing to switch my vote as punishment for how bad Miitomo was.
Okay.
We've used worse criteria on the besties before,
and also just to let Nintendo know that you came very close with Fire Emblem Heroes.
Good start.
I'm going to need the Animal Crossing game you make to be an even better... You proved me wrong. I talked a lot of shit about how bad you were going to fuck this up, and you didn't fuck this up. You made a fucking good Fire Emblem game for mobile. I'm going to need you to do that for Animal Crossing. And then...
Can't be like a card game that's like a party game.
Hey. If rolling dice with fucking smiley faces on it is involved in the process, that's bad. Delete that shit.
Russ, are you comfortable with that?
I mean, there's really no...
Comfortable with Horizon?
At this point, here we are. Yeah, no. Horizon's a very good game. I have no objections to it. Fire Emblem is excellent, and I will continue to play it, but that's fine.
Okay, so now, congratulations to Horizon Zero Dawn. You're the best game of February. Is Horizon Zero Dawn
I forgot that we did this.
Resident Evil 1, right?
Than Resident Evil 7.
7.
I will say, for me, I finished Resident Evil 7 since we recorded the last episode. And for me, I really loved Resident Evil 7. I think it was so smart in all the ways we're talking about. For me, the wheels of Resident Evil 7 really come off in the final act. Like, they really lose sight of everything that was cool about the game leading up to that point.
Do you mean the second that they leave the fucking... a house that is like the main character in the whole shit. We're gonna do one that's a haunted house story, and it's just set in this spooky house, and then you're gonna leave the house, you're gonna be in a boat for a bit. It's like, come on, we were in a cool house for a while.
Remember
y'all.
How you were like scraping for every bullet? We're just gonna get you a machine gun real quick. Y'all. Is that okay? And you'll have plenty of ammo. Don't even worry about that anymore. You just got a machine gun all the time.
I'm gonna vote Horizon on this, but I wanna say I love the second half of Resident Evil 7.
I love the whole game. I'm giving it shit, but like
what I love about it is it feels like they were like, people keep talking about, oh, it's a reboot of Resident Evil 1. No, it's a reboot of every Resident Evil game, and they just crammed it into a single game and made
almost
all of it
in order and like in ratio of like how it is represented.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, we hit Resident Evil 5. Oh God, we're in Resident Evil 6.
Yeah. I enjoyed all of it. I think all of it's very fun. I just think it's hysterical that they literally went through the entire wildness of that series in a single game.
I've heard the DLC is really fucking good, too.
Yeah. But Horizon's in my game.
So I abstain from voting because I'm too scared to play
Resident Evil. I think Resident Evil 7 is... I liked it better, but... that's because it was an 8-hour game that I finished and felt good about myself. So, it sounds like Horizon wins with Russ's abstention.
Excellent. Congratulations to Horizon.
With Russ's abstinence. Mm.
Let's all try to finish Horizon before the next time so we can, you know.
I won't.
I want to talk about
totally
the ending.
Fine, because there's pretty much, actually, we might want to just skip March because there's really nothing coming out in March. So we might just like skip.
Oh, my God.
Accurate, is this waka, a great waka. Rush groove? Oh, is it like a fun joke?
Horrifying how many fucking games
there's the new Jimtendo. Is Mass Effect out next month?
Yep.
Yes. Ghost Recon's out next month.
Well.
Okay. Well, that won't be an issue. Thank you so much for listening to the besties. We hope you've enjoyed yourself. We've certainly have. We got a lot more stuff at polygon.com and at Chris Plant's site, theverge.com.
Oh, thank you.
It's great. There's lots of great stuff on both sites. Because of an article on The Verge, I bought some headphones that I probably shouldn't have.
Oh, my gosh.
It's your fault. I saw your tweet.
I'm sorry.
I blame you. There's more headphones on The Verge for you to read about. And other things, too. It's not just headphones. There's lots of stuff. Earbuds and printers. until next month, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Griffin McElroy.
I'm Todd.
No, we don't do this, Russ. But we don't do this at the end.
Do we not do that?
Next month for the besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Besties!